Cue the defense, the best podcast in the world. We're at it.
I keep saying Henry's a forward.
Richie, who's the best striker you played against?
Henry.
And the fact that we are now taking our country and put our country on the map of world soccer, being the first African nation, the third world nation in the whole world to win an Olympic gold medal in soccer, you know, it was unbelievable.
If you're going to take the time to go and get a pig head and break my locker open and wrap my clothes in it, and send in a different message to me.
I've had to protect my family from going out into the street because you'll have random people that just coming up and abusing them racially. Even some old school managers who are British, they still have the same racial undertones like the man in the street who they're trying to condemn.
Hello, welcome to a very special edition of Shoot the Defence. I'm your host, Stel, and I'm joined by my co-host, Mike Pieri. How you doing, Mike?
Hello, Stel. I'm good. You?
Yeah, long time no speak, my friend. I see your hair's grown.
That's lockdown hair.
Your missus isn't cutting your hair yet. She's not at that stage.
No.
I'll tell you what, my mum cut my dad's hair, and she did a good job considering that she's partially blind. So, yeah. It was quite amusing, though, just imagining her with the scissors and almost cutting his ear off. But anyway, it is what it is. I don't know who's crazier, my dad for letting her do it or just my mum for getting the razor. Right?
Or you for telling us a story.
Well, it doesn't matter. I don't care. I've got no shame when it comes to my family. You know me and my parents. Yeah, no. Right, so we have a special guest. A gentleman who's been coaching at Djurgårdens Academy. The Academy Director has been there since 2017. Christian Krigström Gentile. How you doing, Christian? Hope I didn't butcher your name there, my friend.
Oh, well, you did a great job with pronunciation of all those names.
Thank goodness. How you been, mate? You good?
Yeah, good. It's been a strange year. It feels like it's never ending, but we've been pretty lucky over here in Sweden. So we've managed to, at least when it comes to youth football, we managed to continue to have practices and everything. And the only downside to it, and the only thing that's has been limited, is the games for the oldest players. So we weren't able to finish the season last in October, November, and we haven't been able to start up with practice games or a Swedish Cup for the youth teams. But apart from that, it's all going smooth. So it's good.
Great stuff. And I take it you're back on the training field, coaching the youngsters. You're not doing Zoom sessions anymore.
No, exactly. No, we haven't actually had any. We had a bit with the oldest ones, a period in time when they couldn't be in practice. But for the younger ones, 10 to 15, there hasn't been any glitch at all. It's all been smooth and they've been out on the pitch. So it's been good.
It's great to hear, mate. Well, before we start talking about yourself, Djurgårdens won the Swedish title, 2019, their first title since 2005. I think they're 12th overall. Didn't it go down to the last game of the season, if I'm not mistaken?
It was really close. It was in half time in the last game of the season, we were not winning the championship. And funny story, my wife is a Malmö supporter. And Malmö was the other team there. So we were sitting watching, following both games. And at halftime, she was really happy. And I was obviously not too excited. And at the end of the games, everything has shifted a little bit.
But, were you sleeping on the couch afterwards?
Yes, but I didn't mind.
What were the celebrations like? Because the first title since 2005, I believe. Yeah. And, as you mentioned, Malmo, huge club. And I take it they've been doing pretty well recently.
Yeah. No, I think it was in the club, we didn't really want to sort of take anything for granted or sort of hope too much. So I think, to be honest, it was a little bit last minute. But, when our head came around, we actually did win. We managed to pull together a good celebration and understand how important and how unexpected this win was. So it was great. It was great for the club. It was great. I was in the club. I'll tell you a little bit about that when we get going. But I was actually in the club in 2005 as well. It's the last time we won. So it was great to sort of get to experience that again. It's a very special experience.
Fantastic. Well, Given your experience, mate, I've seen statistics about how you've worked in several places. You were the player liaison officer, a team liaison officer for the Italian national team for the European Championship in 2013, I believe. Was it the Women's European Championship?
Yeah, it was Women's European in 2013. And then in 2009, it was under 21. Wow. So I did actually both. And it was both great experiences as well to sort of understand the scale of things when you know UEFA and FIFA as it was with the women's in the women's no actually FIFA was sorry FIFA was a World Cup qualifier where they did hello as well working UEFA is just another level. It's just and it's really interesting to see how they work.
A lot more protocols, I assume.
Another level. But fair enough. I mean, it's supposed to be top level, and obviously you need to make sure everything is in place.
Mm. And what about working for PSG? Because you work for the
academy. Yeah, there was a really really short thing that we did, but I'm proud of it because we managed to put it together in a really short amount of time. So the stadium where we're playing at the moment, the home stadium for Djurgården and actually also Hammarby, which is another of the Stockholm teams, was inaugurated in 2013. And Zlatan was in PSG at that point, and they wanted to have like an introduction or like the first game at the venue. So they had PSG over, and I can't remember if it was Real Madrid or if it was another team at the game in Stockholm, because then we did also a thing in Gothenburg where PSG played for Real Madrid. I can't remember who were the opponent on PSG, but and they asked us to put this little camp together, and a full week camp became, you know, a 3-day camp became one. So in the end, we just did an event, but working with PSG just for that event was really, you know, to put everything together with the venue and moving the players and getting the players in and so on and so forth. And what was I was really happy to be able to put that together, and I was an experience as well, both doing this in Stockholm and then going out to Gothenburg to do the same thing. And the Milan junior camps, which were the other ones, those were bigger events, and I worked for those for about four or five years, and they were also really interesting events, but those were big events. There was 400 kids for a week. So that was an Italian coach was flying in, 15 coaches we had at the most. So that was great experience as well. But it's more about to do with the organization and structure and everything and organizing everything around it rather than, you know, what's going on the pitch.
Mm. But these camps, I take it you guys, well, there were matches being played, but in terms of the development of these kids, what were they being taught?
No, I mean for the Milan Junior Camp, which is a bigger, like a sort of, at that point it was a brand. It was one of the first clubs actually was going around the world to do these type of camps. It was a brand exposure, basically. It was an opportunity to spread the brand in another country. It was an opportunity, but the main guy who set up, who was responsible in Sweden, did a really good job because he held the quality really high. So he had really high standards on what coaches were going to come here. He had feedback on all the coaches saying, like, this coach was maybe not at the level that we expect. So his standards made the camp really, really good. And it also provided an opportunity for the players to actually, you know, really learn and experience something else. And with Italians, it's more about, there's a different type of leadership. It's a different type of mentality. It's a different type of, you know, it's a lot of cultural things as well. When it comes to leadership, more than, you know, in encountering maybe a different type of drill and so on. So those type of things. And with PSG, it was very short. It was just an inspirational session run by one of the academy coaches. So, but it's an interesting week to follow the players as well. During a full week and pretty long hours as well, and a few of these boys get to, and girls as well got to go down to Milan to for like a Milan day, like a junior camp day. So that was a great thing as well to sort of see that, you know, join the camp and you actually get to go to Milan. It's like it's really nice. It was really nice. I was down there for one of those events. It was really cool, and they very serious about it. That was good.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's quite surprising that Paris Saint-Germain haven't put as much emphasis as Milan have, because we hear how PSG have got their fingers in certain pies, but as far as I'm aware, they're trying to enhance their awareness or their brand within Scandinavia. Is this something that you think is going to continue?
It hasn't really kicked off, to be honest, like at least not in Stockholm. I haven't really seen efforts or really clear like camps and things like that. Maybe they're putting the brand across in other ways, because there's a lot of at this point in time, there's a lot of competition when it comes to camps and coming to and going across the globe to do different type of things. We're going to talk a little bit about Shanghai, I guess, as well. I mean, Shanghai is just a massive, like a melting pot for all those clubs, seeing like it's a world city, and it's one of the biggest markets in the world as well, and there's a lot of money in football as well over there. So that was great to see, like another example of how you see football traveling across the globe, and it's also interesting to live in a time where this is not possible anymore, you know, for a full year, and understand like what do you do, like maybe you were looking too much outside, like what do you actually do when you close in your nearby area, like what if you cannot go abroad anymore, maybe you should like switch the focus and say, okay, are we doing the best we can here where we are, instead of focusing on maybe on other markets. I hope that a few clubs have switched maybe their focus the last year as well, because I think it's important. You need to take care, like, you know, of your nearby area before starting to focusing on spreading and so on.
Yeah. Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. Just a quick one on China. I'm glad you mentioned it, because it's a lovely segue into my next question. Yeah. You mentioned the word size and money. I don't think they were the most eye-opening thing about China, was it?
No, I mean, I went over. It was through a contact that I went over to China to, and I got knows, like I got introduced to sort of the opportunity. And I mean, this was a really small club, but at a really great venue for being in China. So during the years that I was there, you had AC Milan, Inter Milan, Juventus, Manchester United, Arsenal, Dortmund. They were all there having practice for the Champions Cup, which is the summer cup.
That's when the weather took its toll, didn't it? The weather counts.
But I mean, like to have those type of teams that you understand, like the quality of the pitch and the venue that we were able to, and it was central. So it was a great environment to work in. And basically, when I came over to this club, they said, well, you know, you have the expertise. You know, here's a blank sheet of paper for you. What do you want to do? And I, you know, you jump to the occasion and you see, like, okay, well, let's see what we can do here. And so, I mean, it wasn't a great scale. I knew it wasn't, I was from that sort of job. Well, if everything fell in the right way and so on, I could have been, you know, more successful or whatever, but it was more an opportunity to do something else and try out a few ideas that you collected along the way and see what does work and so on. And obviously it's an experience for life. I am still in contact today. I was chatting with one of my friends now. I was co-workers over there, but now they're going to be lifelong friends. So obviously those type of things is what you bring in the experience as well. So
that's incredible, because when we talk about youth development, we always mention how it's, you know, a life-changing experience for the kids, you know, from a social perspective, but then you as a coach, you've kind of learned the same thing as well.
Yeah. Exactly. So and you get to experience and you get to meet parents. I mean, and parents say what you want about parents, but they're really important, you know, when it comes to your job as well. And it's interesting to see their take on the children's sports. And it's interesting to meet children with different takes on football. It was interesting because I tried to implement like this, the Swedish idea of combining grassroots football and academy football under the same sort of roof. I know that clubs do have it, like I'm sure in England as well. But yeah, I know in Spain, for instance, they run like community programs, FCB Escola, which is connected to Barcelona, but it's totally independent. But in Sweden, you sort of run everything under the same sort of club. And you say, well, these type of teams are academy teams and these type of teams are community teams. But you mean, we're all involved in the process with our teams. And I was trying to implement sort of the same system at and get that idea across of the sort of the pyramid where a lot of players do work on you know on recreational level and then a few players are in academy level. But to build something in general, it takes probably 20-25 years. I'd say for if you're starting, you know, you need to be really persistent and work with continuity and so on. At least if you start from scratch, I met my wife while I was over there and she was over here and we had a long distance. So in the end, it was just like, I need to make a life. That was really a life choice at that point, but it was never a choice, to be honest. Like I knew I had to, unfortunately, I had to go home, but I had good things waiting for me as well. So I didn't mind too much in the end. And I brought home a good experience.
There you go. So you ended up back at Djurgården Gardens, Academy Director. Now, again, you mentioned youth development, and you mentioned academies and how it's a gradual process and it takes time. There are some academies some clubs who spent millions on their academies, and some clubs have kind of delved into a different kind of market. I was talking to Flemming Pedersen at Nordsjælland just the other week. He was talking to me about Rights to Dream Project, how they've got a close relationship with Ghana. And you see that more and more frequently in Scandinavia with a lot of Nigerians and African players going out to play out there. What is it about Scandinavia that all these players head out there?
I can give you my idea. I don't want to say this is the truth or this is the way it is, but I think that my idea is that maybe Scandinavia can provide you, can provide the player with a platform of things that they might have to add on to their game. So they get, there's a lot of, as I heard the interview with Fleming, which was really, really interesting as well. And I mean, there's a great talent down there in Africa and all those countries and all those academies. And coming to Scandinavia, I think that you get the last pieces of the puzzle, maybe. And you're also able to get the connection out to Europe. It's a good connection because we are a feeder market up in Scandinavia. So we do have scouts looking for talent here anyway. And I mean, we've been successful as well. We don't have a setup quite as Nordsjælland, but if you look over the last 7 or 8 years, our sports director has great contacts down in Africa, is a very selective on the players that do come over here. But we had some great players coming into Djurgården and then leaving for big clubs. Tino Cadavere, who's now in the French Liga, he's doing really well over there, and he came from Africa. And you have to give these players time as well. You have to give them a lot of time to adapt, a lot of continuity, a lot of patience, and really work with them. And I think that's the key to this, because it doesn't take 6 months or a year. It takes quite a lot and a lot of effort as well to help them. So. So, long answer, maybe not so clear, but basically I think you can provide a platform for the player to come here, but also the platform for the player to be able to take the next step. So I think it's a good combination of those two.
Fantastic. Yeah. Brilliant. Mike?
Yes.
Questions?
Yeah, I just want to know about your own coaching journey. Yeah. You know, how did it go about? And also... you're going to tell us in a moment where you did it. And I just want to know also about the the availability of courses to in Sweden, because obviously it's going to be very different to what we have in England.
Yeah. So I realized when I was 17, I contacted my ex-coach, who was at that point academy director in Djurgården. And at 17, I realized, well, if I want to, I had a clear vision that I wanted to work full time in football, and I needed to figure out what way, you know. And up until you're 17, you say, well, I could be a player. But at 17, I realized, well, I'm not going to be a player at that level, that where I think, you know, maybe I could excel at where I wanted to go. So I started in the coaching path, and actually started as a goalkeeper coach in goal, because that was my position at that point in time. But I quickly became sort of assistant coach, goalkeeper coach, and goalkeeper coaching is great when it comes to working with each individual player, and also great for understanding details and looking for details, because that's basically what you do. You're looking for angles, and you're looking for, you know, can you take one small step? Like, how can you reach another two inches to sort of get that ball? So you're working already there, and you get sort of a vision for details and technique details, which sort of led me into the next path, because I guess I was lucky, but I was also making myself available, and Djurgården needed they had a part-time position as responsible for 6 to 12 years old when it came to sort of the football side of things. So I was 20 years old, and they gave me this responsibility, obviously with good help around me. But I quickly needed to figure out the next way, and I started working with a mentor, a dedicated technique coach. He's really good working with youth players. And we started working together, and we teamed up. And I think, as you two might know, teaming up is really good when you want to do good stuff, because you get someone to bounce ideas off, someone to get inspired with. And so basically his ideas of how to do things and my sort of packaging was a good combination to get our ideas across in a club that, I mean, now Djurgården, we have over 2,000 players. At that point, we were 900 players. I was responsible for 45 teams. And I needed to summarize an idea to say, okay, this is what we're going to do to those 45 teams and be, you know, and convince. And grassroots football in Sweden means parent coaches. And parent coaches, you obviously need to help them. You need to get them and show them an idea that's simple. So I had to work on the pitch in practice, and I had to work as a coaching of the coaching the coaches, basically. And I had to do both things at the same time. And at that point, obviously, the focus was working in children's football. And children's football is a lot about the technique, and the technique connected into the goalkeeper coaching, because you were looking at maybe sort of details, sort of helping the players. And helping them to sort of take the next step. So I didn't work those 5 years that I was in the club. I never worked with the older players. The oldest, I think, were 14 or 15 maybe. And then when I came to China, I started working with all categories all the way up to 16, 17, 19. But I wouldn't say it's my area of expertise. And I mean, even today, I have full-time staff. I have really talented coaches, and it's their job. They're focused on being on solely being coaches. My job is to, you know, understanding the football side, but I need to understand the business side. I need to understand the strategy side. I need to understand the staffing side. I need to understand. There's a lot of things that comes into the academy director role that you need to sort of have competences in. So, I mean, I hold a UEFA B diploma at this point in time. I tried to get into the UEFA A course, but leading into your second question, is it's hard in Sweden because there's not a lot of positions. There's a lot of coaches that would like to go, and then the Swedish FA needs to sort of balance, okay, who needs the most. And even being an academy director in Djurgården, and they say, well, you're actually not on the pitch all the time and working, you know, and we need to choose from sort of what we have in front of us. So even if I know the guys very well, and who sort of needs to make a selection, And it wasn't in my favor this time, but he said, well, you were close, but this time it's not possible. And I said, hey, that's not a problem. It's not a problem. But it is pretty tough. Most of all, it's quite an investment, at least Wi-Fi courses. It's quite an investment, and then elite youth and so on. So I rather also make sure that my coaching staff get to do these courses, because they're very dedicated to the coaching role and wanting to be a coach more than maybe a director or in management. And you know, trying to get them to be part of these courses. But it's tricky. I'd say UEFA B level is okay. I think you can find solutions for that as long as you you're at the right level and maybe coaching a certain type of teams. But UEFA A and on, it's tough. It's hard, but it should also be hard. It should be selective, and it should be a diploma that you really earn.
Just following up from that, yep. This is something that's very important to my club as a grassroots youth club, is about well-being yep. and safeguarding. So we have a dedicated yep. team. We have a group that includes parents as well with regards to well-being and safeguarding. We publish a lot of that stuff. We try and, while we accept that, you know, we are entrusted with the physical and football development of the children, we're also very, very yep. conscious of their well-being. How does that work in a professional club where you are?
Well, obviously, we're trying to make sure that our protocols are sort of clear and they're easy accessed, and also that if something would happen, regardless of what it is, there is always a way, or sort of we know who's responsible and what ways we sort of connect with the parent or player and so on. We're making sure that we follow up. We do have sports, even though we're a big club, we have sports sort of directors or staff that are ahead of their respective areas to make sure that we follow up on who the coaches are, how do we coach, even though it's parent coaches, we still need to have sort of a level on that. And also trying to put the message across that, you know, being in Jugoland, we need to be really careful and really attentive to how do we act, how do we react, how are we on the sideline, how are we as parents, because it's not a small club. And you're putting on, you know, if you're connected to or you're putting on a shirt or a jersey with our club logo on, it means that you're connecting to something that's interesting to write about and interesting to, you know, you cannot hide here. So wanting to be part of it is one thing, but understanding the responsibility of being part of it is also really important. I think that's a message to put across. And then also trying to be very close to our teams through our head of the different ages and categories, basically. Was that an answer to your question, or is it?
Yeah, and just slightly more in terms of the mental well-being. Obviously, you know, you look after their yeah. physical well-being and the technical and tactical.
Yeah.
But what about their, you know, the yeah. mentally?
The mental well-being. We're trying. Yeah. I have to be honest and say that it's the last. I'm not saying the last piece. It sounds like we're complete, but it's one piece of the puzzle that I'm filling in at the moment. So 2 years back, we had a relation with a sports psychologist that we could sort of check with. A few years back, we had a full time sports psychologist working in the academy, whose work still sort of it runs through the things that we do. Sort of his ideas are still, you know, because he looked at the pedagogical side of things as well, and sort of the approach towards our players, and those things sort of still live on. But and then from this year, we have a master student at the Sports University in Stockholm that is helping us with looking into these things. So we're trying to do a better work on it. But it's also a part of the coaching role, I think, and trying to be really attentive to the kids and the youth's well-being, especially for the middle phase, the phase 13 to 15. I think it's very important that we are, that we have a lot of staff around the players, that we are very close to the players, they have good relations with players, because you're coming into an age where you sort of, you're not a child anymore. You're starting to, you know, you have a lot of things to figure out. You had a lot of relations in between the players as well. Like, you know, it shifts a little bit. Coming out on the other side of puberty, you know, you're mature enough to understand the difference between the task oriented, or, you know, if it's personal, and you understand, okay, it's not me personally, it's the situation that, you know, we're discussing here. But being in the middle of puberty with everything going on, you know, you and obviously the not only things going on between the player, but the things going on with the player as well, you need to be very careful and attentive to the players, and talking about this with the coaches and following up and reminding the coaches of what they are, of the players that they're working with, and the categories they have. I think it's important, but there's a lot of work that we still can do, and when it comes to this, and I think you nailed sort of something that's really important. I don't think it's important or exclusive to the Swedish football. I think it's important in all types. I read about the player who was let off from Manchester City and so on. In the end, the parents, to be fair, said that it wasn't, you know, they didn't put any blame or anything towards Manchester City in this case. But I still think it's important that we follow up. I know that for my oldest, the oldest phase, 16, 17, 19, we're very close to the players, and the coaches are very close to the players. And if we have them in our school, we have sort of monitoring of them. You know, if something happens in school, we can follow up. If they, you know, and we have a really close relation with the schools as well. So that's where I feel the most safe, knowing that, you know, we have a great contact into the school. If the players are in another school though, and they come to, you know, it's a little bit more difficult. Then I feel that we might not have so work to be done, but also. But also praise to my coaches, because they're doing a great job on monitoring and making sure that the players are well, and that the players are, you know.
It's good to hear. Thank you.
So, yeah. No problem.
Christian, my next question is related to the Sharks that circle the clubs. Yep. And by that, I mean the big clubs, you know, like your English clubs, like your German clubs, because we've seen so many players, quality players, come from Scandinavia. And while a lot of them aren't ready-made, we've seen how they've developed abroad. Now, you know, you're one of three clubs in Stockholm, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
First of all, how difficult is it to stop these kids from becoming a little bit big-headed if they do hear a few whispers from agents or parents about other clubs being interested? And secondly, what about recruitment, bringing in these players? Because as I said, you know, it's a big catchment, but again, there's three clubs in that area.
Yeah. So, starting with your first question, I mean, I think it's important is to prepare the players and making sure that the players are in, when this happens, the players should already be in a state of mind to understand what is what, and you know, what are we doing at the moment and what are we going to do next, and understanding and reminding them that, you know, this is where you are at the moment. If you want to take the next step, you need to focus on here, and you cannot focus on what's going on around you. And at the same time, sort of confirming, and obviously we appreciate and we understand that you are happy of hearing of these type of interests. So there's a balance there. I don't I don't perceive it at this point in time to be like a problem. I feel it's more something that we need to address and to make sure that we have a good insight in and a good understanding of. But I also think that it's a great opportunity because it's usually a pretty long before a player leaves. It's a pretty long way there. Like usually there's a few tryouts and you go abroad and so on. And to get a few of those players out, to get a few of those players to actually go and experience in that environment, I think is beneficial for where we are as well. And for the other players that are in the, at least in the team, but it could be in the club as well, because they understand, okay, what is required out there, what is required. And already if you have players going away to represent the national team or being in a selection where, you know, already there you can come away with new experiences and so on. I think one of our strategies, we have four main strategies in the club or in the academy, where we said that We want the players to work in long term or focus long term. We need to have high ambition in everything that we do, and we need to make sure that we work on relations first, and then performance, and then the winning is sort of result of those two. And the fourth category is collect experiences, making sure that you do experience as much as you can on the way to becoming an elite football player. And then you have to accept that some players do leave early, and some players will go step by step. And it's important for the players not to compare themselves, because you're not on the same journey. You're on a similar journey, but you're not on the same journey. What is right for you, for your teammate, might not be right for you. And the opportunity given your teammate, you know, it could happen to you, but it could also be another type of opportunity, or your opportunity could come later on. So it's really and this work. I don't know if we're starting too late, but we're starting to talk about this, you know, from the year that they are 15. And we don't want to put ideas too early into their heads either. But from the year that they're 15 and then from 16 and so on, because they're approaching also our end of the journey, sort of or our end station. And also understanding, okay, regardless where you are, what point you're at when you're 19, the next step is going to be moving into adult football and playing for a first team, and then trying to make sure that is as that's the one thing. And then when it comes to recruiting, I mean, we do know that that we are. I mean, if we have a meeting with a player at the beginning of a season that we have approached, we only approach players that are turning 15. Before that, we're not allowed to make. On the one hand, I think it's fair. I think we should not, you know, pull players from across Stockholm and have them to move around. But sometimes you have the feeling that if the player would have moved into another setting, maybe they could have been, you know, even more developed, like develop at another pace. But it's hard to know. It's impossible to know. There's only one reality. Like if they choose to stay where they are in a smaller club, it's fine. That's the pathway they choose. And if they choose to move, it's fine as well. We can only make sure that we provide something really good when they come here. But at least from 14 or 15, we know that if we approach a player, Hammarby and Aiko, it's likely that they have approached the same player as well. And then it's all about making sure that you show them an idea, that you play a type of football that they like. You have a setting that they like, meaning that you provide the environment with the coaches, the environment with the fitness staff, the environment maybe with the mental health that we need to add on, and you know, making sure that we have a good program for that as well. And then understand that some players choose to come to Djurgården, and other players will choose to go to Hammarby or to AIK or stay where they are. And I don't feel that is a... that there's not enough players for the clubs. I do think that Stockholm football maybe would benefit from just having two big ones instead of three plus Brommapojkarna, which is a really good talent sort of pool as well. They're doing a good job there as well. So basically it's four youth clubs, four big youth clubs in Stockholm. Maybe a little bit too many to really get the top, but I still feel that it works. It does work, and I don't feel that we are sort of losing any talent. I do feel that that we have an important job to make sure that we show that we are able to develop talent and being better at that than the other clubs. So recruitment being one part of it, but also making sure that the players that we have, that we do help them to take new steps or next steps. And we also have, that's important as well, when you have a big club as we do, I mean, we have academy level, and then we do have a second level as well, and then grassroots teams, which are basically on one level. So it's at least three levels. And obviously we can find players within our own club as well. And in the second level or in the second teams that we have, we do look there as well to find maybe a player that has been developing well and so on. Long answer.
No, that's fine. That's great, because again, that's a segue onto my next question. Again, it's recruitment based. When you look outside of Stockholm, you got Gothenburg, who, you know, I remember them being in the Champions League, beating Manchester United. Likes of Helsingborg, AIK, another club within the same city as you. Who else? Östersund, who Ian Birchall was coaching a couple of seasons ago, and also Malmo. So there's so many teams that have got a prestigious reputation of developing players. Again, it must be adding to the pressure of your role to try and find those right players. No.
Yeah, it is, but we do have a specific focus though on Stockholm-based players, because we feel that there's a concentration of talent. I mean, we're the biggest city in Stockholm in Sweden by far, with over a million people in population. It's a small pool of talent if you look, you know, compared to Europe and compared to maybe a city of a million that has one club or two clubs that are, you know, clearly the main ones. But at the same time, in the context where we are at, and also in the context that Swedish football is in, where a lot of players do start playing, because we have this grassroots setup, you have to remember that a lot of players do start playing, because there's always an opportunity for you to play, which means that recruitment and the finding talent, it's so sort of the setup works out for itself. Whereas maybe in another country where you only have maybe professional coaches at most levels and maybe parent coaches at one level, maybe there's more kids that choose not to do any sports, they choose not to do organized sports, or they choose other sports. But in Sweden, most of the kids, or many of the kids, have been in or tried football and been in football, which means that there's a lot of concentration on talent in the sport in general. And the reason that we focused on Stockholm-based players is because it's really hard to find a good setup for them and in a big city. If you're in Gothenburg or a smaller club like Östersund and so on, I mean, Gothenburg, biggest city, not a bad example, but if you're in a smaller city, it's easier to say, okay, we're working with the school, and next to the school we have the pitch, and next to the pitch we have a dormitory, so we have dorm rooms, and then we move in the player, we put them in the dorm room, in the morning they walk 5 minutes and they go to the school, and then 5 minutes they go to the pitch, and then they have their whole life there. And I mean, that setup for us being not only a Stockholm-based club, we're an inner-city club. We're trying to stay centered here. So I mean, it's really hard for us to find that type of setup. And when it comes to social responsibility, to moving a player in, I mean, it's a whole setup that you need to make sure that it's in place. And Stockholm is a big city as well. And to be able to assure to parents and so on that, you know, we're gonna take care of it. Like, it's easier, obviously, if you have a setup in a smaller city. So for us, the talent, any talent that moves to Stockholm anyway. I mean, obviously we want to look at that talent, but we do focus. My strategy is to say that, listen, we need to be able to find the 15 best players or 16 best players plus two goalkeepers in this category. I mean, we can, you know, and if we do that, if we work on that, or if we develop them ourselves, that's what we mean, you know, that's and we will come far. And then from the point where we're at, obviously, if we're able to find ourselves in another financial position, smaller city, and then maybe we change our strategy or we update our strategy. But that's where we are at this point in time. And I feel that's safe as well, because I know that the players, they live at home. I know that the players are going home to their parents, and likely to a good situation. I know that they're going to a school that we collaborate with, and it makes me feel more comfortable as well in trying to create like a setup for these players to be able to become elite football players in the future.
Fantastic. Well, I've just got one more question, and it's a bit of a long one, so forgive me for the for the duration it's going to take me to ask it. But Djurgården's won the title, as we mentioned earlier, in 2019, got to the Champions League qualifier, lost 2-0 to Ferencváros.
Yeah,
I presume that hit the club from a financial perspective, because qualifying for the next round would lead to a playoff, and then you'd have to go through that and then get into the Champions League or even the Europa League if you lost the playoff. Then you look at COVID coming in, you know, just hitting everyone and has affected everyone. So from a financial perspective, how difficult has both factors, be not qualifying for the Europa League or even the Champions League group stages, and COVID, affected your role?
The setting that we have is pretty good, because our current general manager used to be a CFO. So that he has, if there's anything that he has good hands with, is the financials. So he knows that how to sort of have a setup and to move the club forward, but also to make sure that we're at a stable situation. And when he started together with the sports director that we have, they also came back to the club after a few years in 2013. We had a really poor situation when it came to financials, and slowly leading up to 2019 and winning the league, we built that financial situation up again. And winning the title in 2019 meant that our players got recognition, and one of the got recognition was our center back Marcus Danielsson, who was the captain during 2019, and we sold him to Dalian in China in February last year, just before COVID hit. And obviously selling a player to China with the price tag that we had on him made us, we had a decent year. Let's put it like that. We needed to make sure that we didn't spend anything extra and so on. But at the end of the day, it didn't affect us too much. And having the idea of running finance and having the situation of not having a good financial status and not having a good financial situation, obviously our CEO does not want to experience that again. And so Europe for us is meant to be something extra that you add on, but we're meant to be able to have a stable financial situation also without it. No, we cannot go year by year without selling players. One part of of the type of club that we are in the type of country that we are. I mean, we're a feeder market in Sweden. We have to understand that we are a feeder market. It's selling players. So that's one part of running this club, and the other part is obviously doing well in the national competition, but also hopefully someday in Europe as well. But also you have to remember that we were out in Europe 2 years ago because we won the Swedish Cup. But before that it had been a long time, and you have to work your way into being a team that is out in Europe, because it's very different when you play those type of games. And that's why I think Malmö is doing, you know, they're doing pretty well, because they're there year after year. So I think our main target is to become is to win, come second or third in the national competition in the Premier League here, and that means that you can play Europe in Europe year after year, and that means that each year that you play in Europe, the club gets the experience of it, and eventually you will have success there as well, and you get to play the group stages basically. So in all, we were pretty lucky, and we have to realize that as well. But there was a lot of hard work to come to that position where we were lucky as well. If this year doesn't change much, we're going to face a different situation, but all clubs are going to face a different situation if it doesn't change this year. So we're still going to be in a better position than our competition, and we're all going to be in a very, very different, difficult place. And that might mean that, you know, you're looking towards the academy and looking towards the youth. Another thing that also to add on to that, in the setup that we have, the club is the club, but the setup is that the men's team is in the limited company part of the club or the setup, and the youth section is under the club part. So the two different sort of financial situation. Okay. But I mean, the limited company is owned by the club, so it's all connected. It's not, you know, you cannot separate them in total, but you can look at the financials that way, sort of, and you can sort of understand, okay, this is how this financial situation is going, this is how this financial situation is going, and then also realize that, okay, what is, you know, what do we need to do here? And I'm not saying it's all happy days, and you know, we don't need to consider anything, but I haven't I was not asked to do any interventions into my financial setup for this season, which I'm very happy that was the situation.
Great stuff, fantastic, Mike. Any more questions before we wrap it up, mate?
Just quick one. What's the best thing about your job and the worst thing about your job?
Talk about putting him on the spot.
The best thing, I think that. I mean, I don't have to look for a hobby, because I have the job as my hobby as well. I think I working in that scope, it's sort of working with the strategies and working with people and seeing people, not physically move, but seeing people move and seeing things progressing and seeing things happening, that you have sort of an idea, which could be a strategy, or it could be an organizational thing. It could be something that you want to explain to parents and so on. So and obviously get your coaches on board in that idea as well. And then seeing it actually happen, and seeing the players in this, and seeing the player developing, and obviously seeing you have the main goal there of educating future elite football players. I mean, that sort of process is probably the best part of my job. And you need to look and remember to look for the small wins along the way. And I think the toughest part of my job is which is also maybe a nice thing, but it's maybe the uncertainty. If you wake up in the morning, you say, okay, it could be a good day, but then something could happen and you don't really, and this is working with people. This is just the way it is. Something could happen because you're working, and that uncertainty could sometimes be problematic, and it could sometimes take you off the path, and you have to lead on again, and then you have to move back a step to take, you know, and that could be sort of the situation. I think, I think a common answer for an academy director could be parents on the worst thing, but it's really not the worst thing. I don't think they're worse, because it's I mean, obviously you have a few parents that are more taking more time of you than other parents, but all in all, I think I have great parents in the club, and I mean, they're really supportive. They're really nice people. They're great parents because the kids are great. And I mean, so I choose to put my focus on those parents and trying to get the other ones on the same path as well. So,
thank you.
That's, yeah, no problem.
Christian, thank you ever so much for your time, mate. Really, really appreciate it. We've gone for almost an hour, and you know, obviously, you know, you're a busy guy, and I really appreciate you taking the time out to join us. It's been great.
No problem at all. I really enjoyed it. Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Brilliant. Well, look, before I let you go, do you have any social media you like to plug, or any projects coming up that you want people to know about?
We do well, not specific. I mean, not specific. I think for for maybe the big arenas. I mean, what's coming up at the moment is that we're doing we're starting up the schools the next year for the schools. We're having the tryouts for that category. And apart from that, I mean, it's all work at the moment. We will try to do a bit more media stuff on the academy. Obviously, I will post that on mostly on LinkedIn and Instagram as well, where you can find our accounts. And then that's it. So to find our accounts is DIF Football, Swedish spelling, and on Instagram. And anyone is obviously more than welcome to follow us there, and also in social media on LinkedIn or webpage. It's a lot in Swedish, though. I gotta admit that. anyone is still welcome to follow.
Fantastic, brilliant. Well, hey, look, you got a guy here that coaches a youth team in London. I'm sure he can send you some players over, can't you, Mike? Wonderful, Mike. Excellent. Anything you'd like to mention?
No, not really. I mean, if you want to interact with me on Twitter or Instagram, you can find me at Del Pieri.
And yep. Omonio?
And to the club, omonioyouthfc.com. Have a look at our website. Lots of stuff happening. Hopefully, we'll have our tournament in the summer. And we're just looking forward to getting back to playing football.
Absolutely. There you go. So that's it for another episode of Shoot Defence. Fingers crossed, Djurgården will get the win next week or the next game, because I think they're a point behind Häcken, aren't they? In the Europa League spot, I believe, Christian. Am I correct?
For Djurgården, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh no, we haven't. The season will start again in April. So April. We're just starting. Yes. So this is...
So you missed out by a point.
Sorry?
So you missed out European spot by a point.
Yeah. Sorry, yeah.
There was me thinking that you had more games to play this season. I was looking at the table and thinking... There you go. No. I've got my research wrong there. Yeah. Well.
Yeah. Oops. No, but we're at this point in time, we are preparing for a new season. We're doing a few friendly games and so on, and then trying to have a great season that comes. Just yesterday, we actually transferred or got Joel Osoro from, used to be a Southampton player, I think.
Okay.
To join us. Was Southampton or something? I can't remember now.
Okay.
It was on loan to Italy, so it's a bit of a youngster to get in our side, and yeah, it's nice, speedy winger. So we're looking forward to see him and preparing him for the season and trying to get us out in Europe again, 2022.
Excellent. Wonderful. So there it is. We're on Twitter, Shoot Defence. We have an Instagram page, Shoot Defence, which don't really use that much, but we will be putting clips of this episode, not me getting everything wrong. So yeah, there you go. Until next time, guys. Take care.